know, as I kept learning more and more, you have this delusion when you start a business that if, at some point it's gonna get easier. At some point, you're gonna have more time in your life. And then you realize, no, each stage is uniquely challenging and beautiful in its own way.
Welcome to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado, the show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. My guests are intense about their business, but it's intensity about achievement. They know that whether it's having a meeting over a beer after a bike ride or the special collaboration that goes on here, business in Colorado is special. Past shows, my Audible book list, and a subscriber info is available at proco360.com. Again, that's proco360.com. Thanks to show sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado. They go big for small business, and they've been committed to this show since it started. And MicroStar Keg Logistics. These guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of keg distribution nationwide. Hey, in this episode, I'll be speaking with Jackie Ruse, co-founder and chief community officer of Revelar, creators of personal safety wearables that connect with your smartphone to signal friends and family if one feels in danger. We'll find out more about that. And we're going to talk about three points in particular: simple product, simple message, progressive funding, starting with Kickstarter and then a round of millions of dollars, and finally, publicity, how to get a ton of publicity that helps drive growth. So I'll be playing also two clips from authors I really enjoy, and Jackie and I will discuss those clips, one from Gary Vaynerchuk, one from Simon Sinek. Finally, I've got some quick questions to satisfy my curiosities, and I'm going to ask Jackie about those. As a bonus, I've got Kendall Coleman joining us of Coleman Coaching to add thoughts and expertise to the conversation. So thanks to you both for joining me. Mm-hmm. Let's jump in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Happy that you're here. Kendall, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's start with a quick overview of Revelar. Tell us about that, Jackie.
Absolutely. So I started Revelar, or I came up with the idea almost 5 years ago when I was still in college. My little sister was assaulted twice before the age of 17. She was the original inspiration for the technology. She always had a smartphone on her, but what her experience has taught me was that in a true emergency, there's just no time to get to your phone. And so I had this vision of a beautiful accessory that she was wearing, and I could see her pressing it and me receiving a message. And so I used my graduation money to pay for the patent process, start that, took a job with Teach for America for 2 years and bootstrapped on that very lucrative teacher salary.
Oh, yeah. And
then, you know, it's been a crazy 3 years since then. Like you said, a Kickstarter, two tech stars, funding by the Foundry Group is an incredible group to work with. And now we've launched our second product in 1 year, the Revelar Instinct. So that launched May of 2017 and is now available in over 200 Target stores on Amazon and on our own website.
That's a great, fast-paced story. And congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Now, how did you evaluate, when you came up with this idea, how did you evaluate that this was really a legitimate business opportunity?
I'm not sure at 22, that's exactly what I was thinking. My entire focus was building something for my family. It was about taking care of her. And when I gave her the initial idea, which was just a button you could press, it's evolved since then. She had such a strong reaction. And that's kept me going for the last 5 years. But the best part about Revelar is as I would go out and pitch and tell people my sister's story, even though it was built for that use case, people would say, I have epilepsy, and this would be this would be life-changing technology for me. Diabetes, they're in a wheelchair, or they live in a violent community, or they're concerned about their safety, or they're survivors themselves. And so, or they just want to live alone and feel safe without paying for monitoring. And so, what's been incredible is realizing how many people could relate to the problem and how many people wanted our solution.
You know, there's a big difference. And I'm going to ask Luke in the production studio to play a clip in just a second from Gary Vaynerchuk. There's such a difference between an idea and doing something with it. In fact, Luke, would you play that clip, please?
I'm a humongous believer that ideas are shit and that execution's the game, right? We've all got ideas. Everybody's got ideas. Do you mean f***ing ideas we all have here? We could probably sit here for the next 2 hours, draw them all out, record them, and predict the next 78 great startups over the next 9 years. And So I think the thing that is another theme in entrepreneurship is there is way too much fodder brought to the idea. Uber was Magic Cab 3 years earlier. So I think, you know, if there's any level of romance left in this room about your idea, I'd like to suffocate it. Because I think the actual situation is what you actually do with it.
Pretty strong words, right? But there's such a difference between a great idea and someone who actually pulls the trigger and does it, right?
There so, really is.
Yeah, so what happened with you that turned it from an idea to something you were going to execute on?
It's funny because somebody actually recently asked me what they thought made me a success. And it was my sheer persistence and tenacity. I'm a bit of a bull, right? So like when I decide I'm going to do something, if I commit, I'm committed. Like I was going to see this thing through. But at a certain level, it stops being about the persistence. It stops being about that. And that's actually why we've just hired a new CEO.
Yeah.
So it's really good timing to have this conversation because that's exactly what I learned. I remember having this moment. I was in San Francisco and I was seeing these incredible presentation by this entrepreneur, the CEO of Density, and the thoughtfulness behind his presentation and the, you could tell like every last bit he had thought through and the intention behind it. And I was blown away. And I realized that I wanted to learn how to be that intentional. Mm. It's also why we believe that our product has to be aesthetically beautiful. A lot of people are like, oh, well, why can't, you know, somebody else just build this button? I was like, it's not just a button. It's the community around the technology. It's the why, it's the brand, it's the aesthetic. And people are like, why does something hidden have to look good? And I'm always joking. I was like, people pay a lot of money for nice bras that you're not supposed to see. So like half the present is the presentation.
Yeah.
And that's that execution. It's half of it is sure. The present's the cool idea, but the presentation is half of it.
Well, when you decided that you really did want to turn it into something, what for listeners who have always had a great idea, and now maybe they've been inspired by this rant of Gary Vaynerchuk to actually do something because ideas are bleep without execution, right? So what did you do to turn your idea into, like, what were the steps?
So I definitely took a step by step. And originally it was supposed to be a piece of jewelry that you could press and it would send for help. And now can have a friend virtually walk you home, can make your phone ring so you can excuse yourself. It can let you check in and it can also send for help. So it's a communication device more than anything else now. But that came from years of customer discovery. That came from years of listening to people's real stories. So initially I started the patent process. That was step one, was protect the idea.
But would you have, you can't protect an idea itself, can you?
You have to build it within a certain amount of time.
So you got a patent pending that's good for a year, but you've got to develop the product itself, a prototype, right?
Mm-hmm. I needed to show that I was actually going to build it. And so I started that process, moved to Colorado with Teach for America. And in the after school or on the weekends, I would work on it. So I originally just started to go to meetups locally in Colorado where I would learn about IP. I would learn about incorporation, you know, getting your company set up, things that I just had never heard about before. And after leaving Teach for America for 2 years, by the time I left Teach for America, I had a functioning prototype. It was so janky. You would plug it into a wall, but it worked, right? Like the point is I could show that I had built something that, and I didn't build it. I found an engineer build it. I'm not an engineer. I didn't go to business school.
So who built it for you?
So funny, out in Loveland, I met a group who had built some of the original Life Alert devices. Mm. And so they were pretty familiar with the type of technology and were able to help me out. So that was years ago, man.
Yeah, but then weren't you worried that whatever Life Alert had built and patented was now in your way?
No, that's why we had done the patent search to make sure that what I was patenting was differentiated enough.
Got it.
Which it was. We've actually now have 3 patents in our patent portfolio. And it's growing. We have more patent pending. So I used to want to be a lawyer. Huh. So I like the legal side of things. My co-founder and I very clearly have distinct things that we like to focus on. But that was the beginning process of Protect It. We incorporated the business. And then I realized I was going to have to pitch to anybody who would listen. And at this point, I was 24. Nobody was taking me seriously. Like nobody wanted to hear out my great idea.
Yeah,
I thought it was so awesome, but everybody else was like, who are you? Because they know what I now know, that it's about execution.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd never done anything before.
I'd never worked for a business before. Yeah. Revelar is the first company I'd ever worked for. And so it was, again, that sheer persistence. So I started going to all the different pitch competitions locally. Denver Startup Week happened. And somebody who joined our team early on was like, we should go. And I got a bunch of my friends who worked night jobs to get, I gave them fake business cards and I made our team look bigger than it was. We were Fearless Solutions back then. Uh-huh. And it
That's
worked.
What it was called before Revelar?
There's been a few names, uh-huh. but Fear, that yeah. was one of them. Mm. And realized that'd be horrible SEO, but I didn't know what SEO was back then. So I just went with it. And so you just kind of learn and adjust as you go. I went to a Women Who Started Up event that's run by Lizelle Van Vuren. I didn't know her then, but I do now. I met my mentor, Jane Miller, who offered to help me after I kept my hand up when they said no more questions. Mm. Research shows that women are less likely to shout out or keep their hand up. So I decided Very to good. Give it a shot.
And I'm sure Jane was all on board with that.
She was.
Jane wrote a book called Sleep Your Way to the Top and Other Misconceptions or something yep. to that yep. effect, right? She's very concerned about the asterisks in that title. Yeah.
Well, actually reading mm-hmm. that book is what helped me to have a really positive first conversation with Foundry Group. Mm. Because one of the main things was don't act like you know what you don't know. Admit that you don't mm-hmm. know and just tell them you'll get back to them. And I think people forget that all the time. But it's super, you know, they hate to admit they don't know something. Right. But I knew I didn't know anything. So I was kind of shameless. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what that means. And I would just ask a million questions.
Hey, you're listening to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. This is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere. And like Jackie Roos of Revelar, choose Colorado. So when you decided it was time to go and get this thing going and you actually had a prototype, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us about Kickstarter.
So the Kickstarter came about when I realized that no investors would talk to me until we had proof of customers. And when you need millions of dollars to build a product, there's limited options as to how you're going to get these customers. Mm-hmm. So we knew we had to do a pre-order and we had to use a platform because my co-founder and I had very little network. I had just left teaching and businesses about who you know. So I didn't have any business connections. And so her and I planned this campaign, and right before we were going to launch it, the Friday before we were launching it on a Monday, I get the call from Foundry, from Seth, saying, you know, we're in, we want you to go live on AngelList.
Wow.
Can you be ready by Monday?
Yeah.
And so I was like, I mean, you don't say no.
Yeah,
so
of course.
I took AngelList, my co-founder took Kickstarter, and the two of us tackled it together. I think I collapsed by the end of those 3 months.
Oh, I bet.
But it was great.
Well, one of the things that impresses me, and I want Kendall to weigh in here, is that it seems like Revelar has a simple product with an even simpler message. And you could have added all, and you've actually added some features, but early on, you really kept things clean. You kept it simple. Starting with, what is your message? You have a great tagline, actually, and I'm not really one for taglines. Yours is actually pretty good. Tell us your tagline.
Go far, stay safe.
Go far, stay safe.
Yeah.
It seems like such a clear, okay, I'm going to distill it my own way. You know, if you feel uncomfortable, if you feel in danger, push a button. You know, Kendall, what's your take as a communications expert on keeping a message that's that clean and that clear?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's just imaginative. Like it provides accessibility, which I love, you know, for people who may not necessarily feel fearless in their life, but all of a sudden now they feel like, wow, more is now available to me. You know, some women, for example, don't feel safe going hiking. And so having a device that you need to do one thing, all of a sudden it becomes completely accessible. And that's what I love about the message.
The question I have is it's so tempting for people to keep adding features. You didn't do that. I mean, you could add easily a lot of switches and a lot of buttons, right? What went through your mind as you chose what to have as features for your first product and even now your subsequent products?
When we launched the first product, we intentionally launched with only two forms of alerts, yellow and red. The yellow came from interviewing hundreds of survivors of assaults and of medical emergencies and them saying, my instincts were telling me something was wrong, but I didn't want to cry wolf. I felt stuck. I didn't want to be rude. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to give them a safe yellow alert that they could trigger first before escalating to a red because that was the preventative piece. And we wanted to see how people would respond to that, knowing that pretty immediately we would have to do a lot of software updates. Somebody once put it, I think it was Brad Feld, he's like, yeah, you're going to launch your product, it's going to be your baby, and you're going to have to redo the whole thing. And luckily, V1 is still a very, very great product, but people very much were like, I want it to vibrate so they could tell that
they'd give them feedback.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I always say that the first one's a monologue, the second one's a dialogue. So the first one's a much more simplified version of our tech, but this one has a bit of more premium look and feel and a bit more rich feature set.
I'm looking at it now.
It's called the Instinct. Mm-hmm. That's our newest one in the black.
Oh, is it? Well, it's very attractive. I'm holding it and it's about the size of my thumb.
Yeah.
And it's quite attractive. And it's meant to clip on clothing, clip on anything, or use as a keychain, right?
As a carabiner, yep. And it's interchangeable, so we'll be building things around it soon.
Very nice. One of the things we've talked about too, and I'll let Luke know that this next clip's coming up, this notion of why, this notion of driving customer activity and customer buy-in because of why you're doing something. In fact, let's play that quick clip from Simon Sinek.
People don't buy what you do, people buy why you do it. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. The goal is not just to sell people who need what you have. The goal is to sell to people who believe what you believe.
Now, today, that seems so important as people are selling shoes or they're selling whatever. This is like a differentiator. Telling people you're doing good things with their sales is a differentiator. In your case, you do have a good story. You do have a good why. And yet, I don't know if it's as necessary because you don't need that as a differentiator. You actually have a product people need as a differentiator. I mean, how do you balance that? Because we're going to talk next about PR.
I think as an entrepreneur starting a business, you know, it's so funny because I'll get people coming up to me and being like, oh, I have this idea. What if I do it? And I was like, that's super cool. Are you obsessed? I'm like, are you obsessed? And they're like, I mean, I know it'd be cool. I was like, so you're not obsessed.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Because there's the ugly baby phase. There's the broke phase. There's the like what's happening phase. And I was like, you got to really be obsessed with the problem you're solving or you're just not going to. I don't know how people would do it. Like if I wasn't passionate about what I was doing, I couldn't work this hard.
Well, now when you said that, it's different because you got to be obsessed about the problem you're solving. It's not about, you're not saying be obsessed with making money on this or be obsessed with making this. It's obsessed with solving a problem, right? What's the difference there? Why'd you say that?
I think that there's a need for more innovative business models that allow us to focus on the greater problems. And I actually went to this really cool conference where they said the only barrier to innovation isn't a lack of innovation, it's a lack of innovative business models and investors willing to take a risk on them. And I hear that all the time about us. And I don't even think we're like that crazy, but I'm our business model, but they're like, we don't have an analog. We have no way of knowing if something like this could work. And so I think that there has to be this mental shift as to how we think about how we like what kind of businesses we fund and why. And I think it also comes down to trust. I mean, I've always said that safety is about trust. And if we don't worry obsessively about the problem we're solving and are building the best product possible to solve that problem, then in my opinion, everything else is pointless. Like if you need this and it doesn't work, like I can't imagine how I'd feel.
Well, that really was a question I had planned to ask. And that has to do, and Kendall, you may have want to weigh in on this too. This notion of trust, I mean, what happens if this product doesn't work one time? You must have thought about that.
Absolutely. And that's why we tested it up and down and left and right. And, you know, and we've worked really hard to build the most robust and we're really proud of it. In fact, people have tested other products like ours and consistently come back and say yours has the strongest connection and it works when we say it will. And so those are one of the, I mean, there's always going to be barriers in a business and you always are going to have to be solving different, I think, issues as it arises. But we felt strongly that we would not launch a product we didn't ourselves believe in.
I noticed on your website that you don't really talk about that it always works. That's just assumed. I mean, Kendall is a communications person. Maybe it's best not to talk about that because maybe that creates doubt when in fact, you don't want any.
Well, I think absolutely it's good to state your validity to, okay, this, you know, the testing of it. And I think that adds confidence, right? And people obviously want to feel confident about the product. But I think it opens up a larger conversation about, and I was curious when you said you're going to be really in charge of PR and things like that, if there's going to be an outreach to parents too, how do you talk to your kids, you know, so that they trust themselves and their instinct. And
and
I know I have a 17-year-old daughter who I've done tons of role playing with in terms of, I'm not going to just tell you about how boys are. That conversation kind of goes flat, but actual role playing with her has been by far the best thing I could have done for her. So tell me how to, you know, show me how to, you know, talk to a boy who is coming on to you or whatever. And those are the things, so having, or is that part of where you're going?
That's really cool. Sorry, you just sparked my head went zooming with that one. So it's interesting you bring that up because one of the things about our product that people often forget about are the emergency contacts. Or who are your contacts? And they're really the key to our success because it's the people that care about you most. So my contacts are the people who at 3 a.m. would answer my call mm-hmm. happily. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you're lucky if you have 5 of those in your life. I think you're very lucky if you have 5 of those kinds of people in your life. Mm-hmm. And the contacts have to accept to be your contact. They won't just start receiving messages.
Right, right. That way they're aware.
It was very mm-hmm. intentional. We did it on purpose because we wanted to make sure that people had conversations about what Revelar was, why they bought it for themselves or why it was gifted to them and how they wanted their loved ones to respond to them.
Wow.
And by making them accept, they do so.
That's kind of neat because it really extends the value of your product, kind of what Kendall's talking about, beyond a device to create conversations around that. Before we run out of time, I want to do a quick but deep dive into publicity. You have used PR to get involved in PR and I guess coverage through folks like Digital Trends, NBC News, The View, Forbes, USA Today, NPR, and a bunch of other ones. How did all that happen?
It's so funny because Kendall and I were chatting about this right before because only recently have people started asking me this question. I didn't realize how great.
I was excited about it.
But I never quite realized that it was such a thing. And so there was a combination of things because each of those, even the ones you just listed, I can remember the different person or connection. Some of it was we had somebody who's local here, Tia Mattson. She's absolutely incredible. She's been supporting us for the last year and a half. And so she got us, the spot on The View and she's been super supportive and helping me learn more. So we've definitely leveraged contractors. But in the beginning, when we got some of our pieces, it was early team members who would know somebody, who knew somebody.
Mm, yeah.
It was us cold emailing from my, me emailing people being like, this is who I am. This is our story.
Can you think of one that you got that way? A cold outreach.
A cold outreach off the top of my head. I'm trying to think. We did a lot during our Indiegogo campaign. So a lot of different Facebook groups with large followers. That was a really awesome influencer strategy we did. So we reached out to a bunch of different people I would personally reach out. But funny enough, I think most about it is the storytelling. And I think a lot of it is the relationships. A lot of people are like, how did you end up being a contributor for Forbes? And that came about, Lauren Feldman, who's amazing from Forbes, was in town doing an interview on Boulder Companies. Brad sent out an email being like, who would like to chat with him? I was like, let's go to lunch. And we ended up talking for hours. He's super interesting and he loves supporting entrepreneurs and hearing how he had helped entrepreneurs move their businesses along as contributors. I just asked him, I was like, how do you get to do something like this? Like, how does that even happen? And so it's just about asking, how does somebody get to start doing this?
Cool. Very good. Well, we've reached a point in the show where I've got several, I'm just calling them curiosities. I've got 5 questions I want to run by and get your answers pretty quickly. My first one has to do with your revenue model. This one really intrigues me because it's a one-time upfront purchase and there's no recurring revenue, which is sort of the opposite of what most people seek. Where is that? How did you come up with that decision? And is that where you're going to continue to go?
I worked in low-income communities for most of my career. So I felt adamant that our first product work and have enough value as it stands alone to be bought just as is as a one-time purchase. We are going to be adding value-added services mm-hmm. that allow for that, especially in the safety space. It makes a lot of sense for people with chronic illnesses, et cetera, for people that live alone, but maybe don't want to pay the cost of a 24/7 monitoring. So we will be adding those features later on this year, but I wanted people to be able to access our technology. And I hate that I keep seeing amazing tech that's so out of reach for the communities that need it most.
Yeah, but you're funded by VCs. These guys probably want to figure out, well, how are we going to keep the revenue coming, right?
I mean, Fitbit did pretty fine on its own and it was a one device unit sale. So I'm thinking they're okay with
it. Fair enough. Yep. All right. Next question. You changed your title recently from co-founder and CEO to chief community officer.
I did.
What's that about?
Well, I hated the title chief evangelist. No, just kidding. But you know, as I kept learning more and more, you have this delusion when you start a business that if at some point it's going to get easier. At some point, you're going to have more time in your life. And then you realize, no, each stage is uniquely challenging and beautiful in its own way. But after 5 years between Teach for America and this, I realized I was too, I felt like I hadn't, I needed some objectivity. I needed some fresh energy, and I wanted to be able to learn without killing myself. I did start this business very young, and we have been highly successful at both fundraising and launching products and getting it off the ground. But having Brian join the team has been, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's like won multiple like top CEOs of the year award. He's also the easiest going guy I've
ever met.
Really?
Well, he's the former CEO of Otterbox,
He
right?
is. Mm-hmm. He grew from a 6-person team to over $1 billion. And what he said was so true is that he knew at which stage he needed to rebuild the team. Mm-hmm. And scaling a business, like I said, my persistence and tenacity got me so far, but then it turns into a science and an art.
Yeah.
And that finesse is something I have so much respect for, and I can't wait to get to observe it firsthand.
All right, next question. You've, on your website and through your marketing, seem to be appealing really primarily to women. Mm-hmm. And is that something that you, that's, obviously, your product, everything you've described has been about women using it. Are you looking at a broader audience? Are you comfortable where you are? And are you going to, would you have to change the way you approach it to appeal to men as well as women? And do you even want to?
I would actually love to know like what part of that is only for women, because we get that all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the aesthetic, but no, I mean, it's absolutely a product built for everyone. I've always, you know, actually I got a lot of pushback in the beginning because I was like, no, this product is for men and women. And people would say, no, just women. I was like, no, 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 men mm-hmm. and women, all people. Mm-hmm. And it was something we had to take a stand on. But it's something we want to do a better job of communicating with all the different audiences.
Interesting.
And when you say, mm-hmm. when you say go far, stay safe, I love that. But does it need an asterisk of as long as GPS can find you? I mean, what if somebody goes off Wi-Fi, for example, or goes off out of a signal, what happens then?
Oh, I mean, yes, it requires cell phone connection.
Yep. Yeah, so, okay.
I mean, you can get that in most places now, but yes, there's definitely a different type of tech once you get way in the backcountry.
Yeah.
So a couple more questions before we run out of time. What mistake have you made early in your career and pointing out that you're 24 now, is that right?
I'm 27
now. 27 now, mm-hmm. started at 24, got it. What mistake did you make early on that continues to remind you to do things differently? I found really bad mistakes that have a lot of staying power.
I'm like, which one?
Yeah.
I wish earlier on I had understood how to recognize if somebody was scalable and how to recognize if they were no longer happy. Because I think one of the mistakes early founders make, like I'd never had to let go of anybody ever. It was horrible. I remember talking to Seth, our investor, and just being like, I really have to do this? And you do. You really do sometimes. And it couldn't even be. Sometimes it's not even because that person isn't great at what they do. It's just not right for what stage you're at.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't realize how it could affect people around them and other people if you're not able to acknowledge the business needs over personal. And that's a tricky one to figure out early on.
Yeah. So this is your first and only company that you've started and grown, right?
This is my first.
Do you look forward past
Revelar? It's very hard for me not to. I think in like, I'm a planner extraordinaire. Yeah. I have like my next week's plan for the next 6 months. So I love planning. So I definitely look out and I definitely am very passionate about a wide variety of subjects.
Well, speaking about a wide variety of subjects, as you know, I listened to Audible. We played a couple of clips from the web. What book have you read? We'll leave kind of on this note. What book have you read that you feel has really shaped you, really inspired you about how you go about either business or life or both?
Funny enough, I haven't read all of Bradfeld's books. I only read Venture Deals and Startup Relationships.
Wow, if he listens to this.
I think he'd understand. Okay. I think he's a pretty understanding fella. But his Startup Relationships book, I remember asking him, it was all about how to survive a startup and still have a personal relationship with somebody, which is really hard to do, especially in your like mid-20s. And so I read the book and was heartbroken because the only female CEO had the most tragic story. She's also now on my board, an amazing Jenny Lawton, and she's now the CEO of Techstars. And I hunted her down because of that book. Because I was like, she was a female in hardware. She'd been through a bunch. And I was like, I want to learn from somebody like her. And I hunted her down. She goes, you fangirled me. And I did. But that book, relationships matter to me. My community matters to me. And that's why I took on this new role. I hated being so far away from people. Yeah. I hated feeling isolated. And so it was a reminder that I have a ton of time to learn all the things that I want to learn and do all the things I want to do. And you can't have it all at once, but you can work on both, on building both aspects of your life.
Well, let's wrap it up with that. Today on ProCo's 360 Pro Business Colorado, I've been speaking with Jackie Roos, co-founder, chief community officer of Revelar, creators of personal safety wearables that connect with your smartphone to signal friends and family if one feels in danger. We've talked about business, all kinds of things about business, in particular, one that's easy to understand with a clear mission and message, about fundraising, about getting massive publicity, and lots more. Jackie, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado.
Thank you so much for
having
me. Glad
you're here. You're welcome. And to Kendall Coleman, thanks for joining us. Great job, both of you. This is Dave Tabor. And this show, Pro Business Colorado, and past shows are available at proco360.com. Go there to subscribe. Again, that's proco360.com. Thanks for listening.